Hey listeners, it's your host, Daisha. This episode that you're about to hear is frankly not for the faint of heart, because it reaches new heights of the human voice, that is. John Holliday, an opera singer, talks about the countertenor voice specifically, which if you've never heard it is going to absolutely knock your socks off, but he talks generally also about the gendering of the operatic voice and how the opera world sort of embraces gender fluidity in this unique way for the purpose of art. You're gonna learn a lot, and you're gonna like it. And if you do, make sure you go to iTunes and subscribe to us and rate us and review us. All right, that's it. Enjoy. My name is Daisha Clay. I'm the audio librarian here at Classical 91.7. While I'm a real librarian, I have a deep, dark
secret.
I know very little about classical music. I grew up listening to rock. And I know something about jazz. But when it comes to classical... But I really want to learn. So, every week on this show, a classical music expert will give me a piece of classical music they think I should know. And then we'll discuss it. Come learn with me in the classical classroom. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Classical Classroom. I'm Daisha Clay, and here with me today is John Holliday. John is a countertenor. He grew up in the Houston area, and he's worked with local arts groups like Ars Lyrica and Mercury, but he's in demand all over the U.S. these days. He'll, in fact, be performing at the Lincoln Center in July and at the Glimmerglass. Am I saying that right?
Yeah, that's right.
Glimmerglass. The Glimmerglass Festival. That's correct.
That's such a cool word. Glimmerglass Festival.
It's really a great place, too. If you can ever come, you should come out.
Well, and you're going to be at the Singapore International Festival,
yes,
too,
I will
right?
Be. Yes.
And both in August.
Yes.
That's awesome. Well, John, welcome to the Classical Classroom.
Thanks for having me. Hello, everybody.
So what are you going to be teaching me about today?
Today, we're going to be talking about, there's a lot of things, it seems.
Yeah.
The castrato voice, the countertenor voice, and trying to give a little brief history of the different voice types in opera and how it, I guess, came to be.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. This is very exciting because I wanted to have you on the show after we had you on for another. We have this mm-hmm. thing called Skyline Sessions.
Yes.
And I heard your Skyline Sessions performance.
Uh-huh.
And I was just blown away because
Aww, it's such...
Well, I mean, your voice is beautiful, but mm-hmm. I had also never heard that voice range before.
Never.
Countertenor.
Okay.
So actually, let's start there. Can you mm-hmm. define what countertenor voice is?
I want to be, you know, let's see. As a countertenor, I'm going to tell you what I think it really is. As a countertenor, okay. The countertenor voice is a voice that is the highest male voice range in all of the opera
okay.
that you're going to ever hear. It's kind of like, since I know you like rock and jazz, it's kind of like Frankie Lyman, or it's kind of like Frankie Valli.
Okay.
You know, things
yeah.
like that. Those singers who sang like that, even a little bit of Michael Jackson when he would sing in his higher voice.
Right.
So that's really what the voice type is. It's basically a male mezzo-soprano, usually an alto or someone who, like me and some others, can sing in the soprano range too.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And what makes a countertenor voice different from, is it just that it's a guy singing and then you would call it something else if a woman was singing? I'm completely ignorant of this. So
okay.
How does that work?
So the difference between, let's just talk specifically about the male voice right now.
Okay.
Okay, specifically the difference between a countertenor and a tenor or a baritone or a bass baritone is that it really is someone singing. A lot of the research says that a countertenor is singing in their falsetto voice, which means a fake voice or a false mm. voice. And then there are some who sing it, it's their real voice.
Yeah.
And you can tell that by the way they are ascending through a registration. You can use, and registration in opera or in singing is when a voice will either change the timbre, the way it sounds as
yeah.
you're going up, or it changes in timbre as it's going down. But if you can sing it in one registration, that's usually someone who is singing in their real voice.
Gotcha.
People oftentimes refer to it as the head voice, you know, singing in the head voice, and really exponentially higher than the baritone and tenor voices, literally singing as in a female range. Mm-hmm. None of the other male voices do that. The haute contra can kind of be high like that, but not nearly as high as the countertenor. Yeah. And that's really the difference.
Okay.
Now, in the female voice range, you have a female voice called a contralto. And the contralto is someone who sings low in the female range. It's the lowest female voice. And okay. They sometimes sing in the male range, a voice range.
Interesting.
And my best friend, in fact, is a contralto. So it's very funny. You know, here I am a countertenor and she's a contralto.
That's awesome.
So, yeah.
Well, so I would love to hear some examples of both of these kinds of voice. Can we hear something in the countertenor range?
Sure. Let's hear... David Daniels, who's a very, very good friend of mine. We're very, very close, and I have an enormous amount of respect for him as a countertenor and as a human being. He's just so kind, and we really love each other. And I think in this clip he's singing Ombra Mai Fu from the opera Circe by Handel. And it's this beautiful aria that's talking about, surprisingly enough, the love and adoration that he has for a beautiful tree, that this tree provides such a beautiful shade to him. And in the recipe for, he says, nothing in the world, not storms, not the torrential rain, has battered you. You've always stayed constant, and I thank you and love the shade that you have provided to me. It's this beautiful song. It's one of the most famous countertenor arias that is performed.
Interesting. And it's to a tree.
Wow. And it starts the opera. It's the very first aria that you hear.
Huh. Yeah, let's hear it. What a beautiful voice.
Yes, this is David singing in 1997.
Man.
At the Tuckers.
Wow. I was interested in a term that you used while we were talking. Mm-hmm. You said head voice. And when I was kind of briefly looking over these things online, I noticed the term chest voice.
Yes.
Is that, so those are two different
things? Oh, they are very different things. Chest voice, to me, is like the lowest of the voices that you would use.
Uh-huh.
Then you have your middle or modal voices, which is where you normally kind of speak.
Yeah.
And then your head voice is above that.
Gotcha. Mm-hmm. Okay, I see. And that's just talking about like how you're using your diaphragm, how you're using your vocal cords,
exactly.
that kind of thing.
The diaphragm is an important thing when it comes to breath, because breath for every singer is the thing that fuels the singing.
Right.
Without breath, we can't sing.
Yeah.
And without the proper breath, you don't have a beautiful sound, a
right.
constant sound.
Yeah.
Especially like this beautiful held note that David sings here. He just sings ombra on a really long phrase. It requires lots of strength and lots of breath support.
So I'm also interested in hearing the female voice that you were talking about, the
contralto.
Yeah, do we have an example?
An example, but I didn't send one. We could hear a very famous contralto. Her name is Eva Podles.
Okay.
And she, has one of the most gorgeous voices I have ever heard. And see, she has a really, like a 3-octave range, apparently. It's crazy.
Yeah.
But I want you to hear how beautiful her low notes are and how beautiful the high notes are. That's the thing that even for countertenors, it's the challenge. You have to have a beautiful consistency even in the low as you do in the high. And so oftentimes there are some of us, when we were starting to learn this, you have to refine that. You're learning to refine the different areas of the voice to make it one and uniform. Let's hear her sing... the La Cieca, Voce di Donna, from La Gioconda. And this is from 2005. You hear the way that she's doing that. It's just
chills. She's sort of lilting up and down.
Yes, that's right. That's the right kind of thing. There's a buoyancy in all of our singing.
Yeah.
And she's really exhibiting that well, going into a lower chest voice,
yeah,
if you
she
will.
Kind of like
and back
dips
into this
into
beautiful,
it.
Beautiful voice that she's got. And of course, the quintessential contralto, especially for a lot of African-American singers, would be Marian Anderson, who is a very, very famous contralto. And sang only once at the Metropolitan Opera, but sang beautifully and championed the role that she did sing there.
Yeah.
So beautiful, beautiful singer of art song. Anything that Marian Anderson sang was beautiful.
Yeah.
So she's just a magnificent singer.
So this is amazing to me. I mean, these voices are, I don't know, they're so unique and they're so sort of, I don't know, the gender fluidity,
yes,
in the opera world, I think, is so fascinating. How opera is just, they're just like, yeah, this is what we do.
It happens so much.
Yeah.
It really does. And I think a lot of that comes from, especially if we talk about the castrato and talk about the counter tenor voice, it comes from a time where people believed that women should not be singing roles. And I can't remember specifically the Bible verse, but I think it may be like 1 Corinthians or something like that. But if that's not true, edit that out.
I'll go look for it.
But I think that there's a verse in there that said they believe that women should be silent. A lot of the gender fluidity that we talk about in opera comes from that. In the very beginning, a lot of women were not allowed to sing in opera. So you had castratos who sang. And really, the castrato voice, there's a lot of history with castration, which we know is basically the removal of a man's testicles before, or I should say a young teenager or a young male before they would hit puberty, their testicles would be removed in order to preserve their purity and the hormonal imbalance so they wouldn't change and have testosterone. And so
They would maintain that sort of young person's voice.
Exactly. So that they would maintain the young person's vocal cords, but would have the bone and breath structure and apparatus of a male, of a man.
Yeah.
And a lot of times when the men or the young boys would be castrated, they would grow very long limbs and very large rib cages, which would enable them to have an amazing amount of breath support. And so a lot of that idea came from they were stronger and had more ability to sing longer phrases than women did and could sing sometimes higher than women did.
Wow.
So
because it's like a boy's voice.
A boy's voice. But then with the ability to have all of the anatomy,
like the power
and power of a man as they got older.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I think there was a study that said about 40% of those men or young boys who were castrated did not become opera singers. A lot of them,
oh, no.
Some of them sang in choruses, which back in that time was a really big thing.
Mm.
especially in churches in Italy, in the Catholic churches, there were a lot of castrati singing until it was banned, I believe, in 1861 when the Italian unification came to be. It was banned. But even then, there were some castrati who stayed around. And one of them is Alessandro Moreschi, mm-hmm. who is what we refer to as the ultimo castrato, which means the last castrato.
Yeah.
And in fact, I think there may have been one or two after him, but he was the only one for whom any recordings have been found and left behind. And he made recordings in 1902 and 1904. And I believe he was born in 1858 and he died in 1922. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of the general consensus about his voice, and we'll hear some of the recordings here of him singing Ave Maria, which is a song composed by Johann Sebastian Bach mm-hmm. and Gounod. And Bach was one of the composers of the Baroque period, which we refer to being from 1600, around 1600 to 1750. So he's singing this this song here. But a lot of people have said he sang past his prime. But in hearing this, it makes me wonder what Farinelli sounded like,
right,
who was one of the most amazing castrati.
That they made a movie about.
Yeah. And Senesino, who I was just researching him, of course, for this too. But knowing that he created 17 roles that Handel wrote for him, several of which I have sung.
Handel wrote for him.
Handel wrote
specifically.
For him specifically. Wow. A lot of, because Senesino was very famous too. So it makes me wonder when we get ready to hear this clip, what those castrati sounded like. What did they sound like? It must have been amazing. And some of this is going to sound, you know, to some people, awful. But to me, right. as a countertenor, it makes me wonder, like, oh my God, to me, I hear the beauty in the sound.
Sure.
And I hear the intrigue in what, you know, the people in that time were looking for, because we have to remember that castration of boys and the singing of the castratos lasted from the middle of the 16th century to about the, like I said, 1860, so like the 19th
yeah.
century, middle uh-huh. of, or a little bit more than the middle of the 19th century.
Yeah. Well, and I think that's a really interesting point that you're kind of touching on there, which is that the voice, the castrati voice is beautiful and lovely,
yes.
but then it's got this sort of what could be seen as an inhumane
yes.
side to it.
Yes.
So it's like the art of it is
yes.
is beautiful, but the Ugh. But the sort of human component there,
yeah.
the sacrifice that was made for
was.
Art.
And a lot of the castrati who did this, it was not because of them, but because of their parents. A lot of them came from very impoverished families who sought to send their sons to be castrated because it was a better life for mm. them. And so I did not include this clip either, but actually on YouTube there is the entire movie of Farinelli.
Oh, yeah.
It's an absolutely amazing movie to see
mm-hmm.
the life of a castrati like Farinelli, who was extraordinary
yeah.
and extremely famous. But yeah, we can listen to Alessandro
yeah,
now, who was called the Angel of Rome. So if he was called the Angel of Rome, just imagine
yeah.
What these castrati sounded like. And I love this song. This is one of the songs that I sing.
Oh!
of haunting.
It is. Like, it really is.
And especially I think that a grown man is producing mm-hmm. that voice.
And that was toward the end of his life. That's 1902 or 1904.
Wow.
So if he's born in 58, I mean, that's almost 50 years.
Oh my goodness. Wow, that's amazing. What a voice. What a unique sound.
It is. It's very, I mean, even when I was listening to it, I thought, oh, it's so different. It's mm-hmm. so different sounding than to what countertenors sound like today.
Yeah. Yeah.
But there is, I can hear there's a power to it. Even at that age in his life, there is a power and strength to his singing.
Yeah.
Different than mine would be, or different than David's or any other modern 21st century countertenors would be.
Right.
But there is still a beauty to it.
Yeah.
And that was so poignant back then.
Mm-hmm.
So it's so interesting and beautiful to hear his voice. And I pay homage to him, because without him I wouldn't be able to sing, you know, with him and the others that came before him. I wouldn't have music to sing.
So did, and I'm not even sure quite how to phrase this question, did countertenors exist before the castrati came along, that practice came along, or is the countertenor range something that people have aspired to sort of replace that voice?
I think that it's probably that they've aspired to the voice to replace that voice type.
Okay.
And to be quite honest, I don't know. There may have been countertenors that existed back then. I don't know. In my estimation, I believe that there probably would have been people around trying to imitate that voice.
Right.
So, but I'm sure that term, I don't think that term came into existence until maybe the end of the 17th or beginning of the 18th century. Maybe.
Hmm.
I mean, I might be making that up. But it's a term now that is definitely something that we as countertenors today are recreating those roles that Senesino and Farinelli did.
Okay.
And people like Alessandro. Alessandro did not sing opera. He specifically sang in the chorus at the Sistine Chapel.
Mm-hmm.
And so he was highly regarded as one of the soloists there, but never sang opera. So that, too, makes me wonder what Senesino and Farinelli sounded like.
Yeah.
Their voices had to have been extraordinary and so powerful.
So I'm curious, just mm-hmm. like, and I don't know if there's an answer to this question, but just kind of interested in what you think about it. Why is opera so mm-hmm. comfortable with gender fluidity and men having these beautiful voices that in any other sort of realm would kind mm-hmm. of be associated with a woman, and mm-hmm. and trouser roles where mm-hmm. women are playing the roles of men? Why is that so sort of easily embraced in opera, but not in the rest
genres.
Of the world? Yeah, like what makes
question.
It sort of open to playing with that.
I think that, and this is just my opinion, so this is not a fact.
Yeah.
But I think that opera has remained gender fluid, if you want to call it that, because singers sing where they need to sing. Singers' voices are appropriate where their voices are appropriate. I could not sing a tenor role. I could not sing Radames in Aida. You know, I could not sing those roles. I'd love to sing Aida, but I know I will never do it in my life. But I mean, you just did not do that. They just don't have it. So there were specific roles written for the countertenor voice
mm-hmm.
back in the 1600s to 750, and still roles that are being written now.
Yeah.
There are a lot of composers who have found that and believe that the countertenor voice is a viable one. And I agree with them. Anytime I mm-hmm. meet a composer today, I always tell them, and are you writing for countertenors? Do you include them in your music? I think that you should. If you're a composer and you're composing in the 21st century, you must write for all voices. So, but I think that opera has remained that way because it's, you just singers sing where their voices need to be.
Mm.
And opera houses and opera directors know that. There are a lot of mezzo-sopranos who sing the role of Julius Caesar. Sarah Connolly is one who I think is probably one of the most convincing Julius Caesars I've ever seen, and looks like a man as she's singing it. Uh-huh. It's just amazing to watch that. And a great friend of mine too, Alice Coote, who sings Sesto, which is the role of the boy, the young boy in Julius Caesar, has sung trouser roles. Just because they're necessary sometimes, and sometimes there are countertenors who don't sing those roles.
Because the art asks for it, and the person is able to deliver essentially.
Exactly. They're asked, can you sing this role? And they know their voices, you know, or I'm sure they consult their managers or their teachers and say, do you think this role is appropriate?
Right.
And they'll sing it.
Well, and I realized, too, when I asked that question, I don't really know a lot about the opera world, and so I just sort of assumed that there's no prejudice, that everybody's super cool with everything, and because I you know, have been studying what you sent me to prepare for this episode, and because I have friends who are opera singers who have done trouser roles and things like that. And so I just assume, like, everybody must be cool with this, but do you, as a countertenor, have you had any issues?
No, I've never had any issues.
This is good.
I've never had any. I am also a person who believes that if I don't get something, that it's not because someone doesn't like me, it's because it wasn't intended for me. So I don't know. I mean, there may be things that exist that I don't know about, but I don't think about that. I always am thinking about, what's the next move? How do I go forward? How can I rise above and get where I want to be? My goal is to always be the best John Holliday that I can be. And I don't ever worry about anybody else. It's their career. And I'm always ecstatic for them when they have things.
Right.
And then when I get my own, I'm even more thrilled.
Well, I'm glad that you haven't personally experienced any sort of voice discrimination.
Yes.
But I'm wondering if any exists in a sort of backdoor kind of way, are there people who won't compose for that voice or I don't know.
No, I think that's a great question, because it's just like, there are a lot of opera singers too, I think, who they don't like the countertenor voice, but some that have not found the countertenor voice that they find lovely.
Gotcha. Okay.
But there are a lot of composers who don't compose. I don't know them personally, but I'm sure there are. I'm sure there are composers who don't like the voice. But we're lucky that we have composers today who are doing that. Philip Glass has done some amazing work with the countertenor voice.
Cool.
That is just beautiful. And Jonathan Dove, who's a British composer, is just amazing. So there's a lot of people out there who are doing things.
That's fantastic.
And I think that as a voice type, we tend to focus on the people who are doing rather than those who are not. So we just want to sing, you know. So
interesting. Well, since we're on the subject of you, I am really curious how you found this voice. Did you just wake up one day and go, oh, I can do this really amazing, unique voice? Were you just singing along with Adele and you were like, oh, I got that? Like,
Adele, she seems to be everybody's favorite these days.
She's kind of awesome.
I know, she's awesome. Yeah. Everybody just loves her. I have sung since I was 2 years old. My grandmother and my mother have told me stories that, or they would sit me on top of the piano and I would sing, or they would stand me on top of a table and I would sing. So I'm sure, like many other opera singers, that I probably started to sing before I spoke.
Yeah.
I want to believe that. That's what I want to believe. But I've been singing since I was 2 years old in church and have adored it. I mean, I have chills talking about it. Singing is such a joy to me.
Yeah.
It brings me such peace. And for me, growing up, it was a lot of my sanctuary, because as a kid, I was made fun of for singing in school, never in church. And because I sang so much as a little boy, when I got into the sixth grade, when I had the option of being in choir or band, I chose to be in band. So I played the alto saxophone in sixth and seventh grade, then switched to the tenor saxophone in the eighth grade all the way up through high school, and was a drum major at my high school. But when I got into high school, I was a part of the choir, and I sang as a soprano in choir.
Really?
Now, I did not know then that I was a countertenor. I just thought, I'm singing with the sopranos in choir. But I've always sung high. And so when I went to college, I went to college as a tenor. And I remember talking to my teacher. Her name is Barbara Hill Moore. She's one of the most amazing women that you'll ever meet. A diva in every sense of the word. A great person who everyone should know. And when I told her, I said, but I can sing really high. I said, I promise you, I can sing really high. And at that time, my friend Tiffany was singing the role of Gilda, or just singing an aria of Gilda from Rigoletto. Mm-hmm. And the aria is Caro Nome. And I just remember singing, you know, the aria, making up words, because I still don't know all the words. But I, but I would sing it. And I said, "This, I can sing it. Let me hear this."
Yeah.
And she said, "Oh, John, you're just going to be screaming up there. Are you sure you want to try this?" And I said, "I just want you to hear me sing this really quickly." And so I sang it, and she said, "Oh, you are what we call a countertenor."
Oh, so that was the moment.
And that was the moment where it happened. It was my,
okay.
It was the beginning of my sophomore year, or the end of my freshman year, one of the two.
Wow.
And since that moment, I have been a countertenor. And I remember the conversation with Prof. She said, "Now listen." She called me John T. She said, "If you're going to be a countertenor, you're going to be a countertenor. You're not going to switch back and forth. Huh. I want you to be strong, and I want you to be the best countertenor that you can be. No one else." Mm. She said, "I want you to emulate anyone else. I want you to be the best countertenor that you can be." Mm. And from that instant, I developed that idea that I didn't want to sound like anyone else.
Right.
I wanted to sound like me.
Yeah.
And so I think to this day, no one that I can think of, I don't share a similar sound to anyone. It's mm-hmm. just my sound.
I love it.
And I like that.
I love it. I think that's fantastic. That is a really inspiring story. And I think we're going to have to hear, before we wrap this conversation up, a recording of you.
Okay.
You're okay, if we must.
If we must hear one. There is the aria... Crude Furie degli Ori di Abissi from Circe. Oh, it is a mouthful. I did that in competition for Dallas Opera in 2011, and I won first place and was the first countertenor to have ever won that award at Dallas Opera. And then I did it in 2014 in Operalia, which is a competition that Placido Domingo has, and it's what we call the Olympics of opera, because even the Metropolitan Opera has a phenomenal competition, which has done such great mm-hmm. things and has thrust people into stardom, but it's particularly for singers who are from the United States. Placido's competition is for singers from around the world. Mm. And so I was in a competition with singers from Russia, from Paris, all over the world. And so it was such a great experience for me. And there I won third place.
You're so powerful at such a high range. That's just so amazing.
I sing a lot higher than a lot of countertenors do. I think of myself oftentimes as a sopranist, but I don't say that because there's oftentimes a stigma that exists when you say you're a sopranist. They will ask you, "Oh, well, if you're a sopranist, you can sing this, and if you're a sopranist, you can sing that." And so I would just say I'm a countertenor, but I do know myself that my voice sits higher than most other countertenors, and I love that.
Well, John, I hate to stop our conversation. This has been so cool. You've taught me so much today.
Thank you. I like to do this. This is fun.
And you drove through horrible traffic to get here.
Anything just for you.
Just for me. Well, John Holliday, thank you for being on The Classical Classroom and teaching me all of these great things. And I'm going to post the video to your Skyline session in the web article for this episode. So listeners, make sure and go and check out John singing. All right, that does it for this episode of Classical Classroom. For more Classroom, go to houstonpublicmedia.org/classroom. You can follow us on Twitter, Tumblr, YouTube, SoundCloud, and now Snapchat. Find us there at C Classroom Show. You can also subscribe to us, rate us, and review us on iTunes, and frankly, you should. You can email me at dclay@houstonpublicmedia.org. Thanks today to audio producer Todd Trimolo Holslander for twiddling knobs. Thanks to editor Mark DiClaudio for his piercing prima donna eyes. Thanks to John Holliday for being here today. Thanks to me for saying words. But most of all, thanks to you for listening. We'll catch you next time.
Bye-bye.